Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today is Monday, January 26th, 2026. And if you've been in this industry for more than, 5 minutes, you know that dates matter. Deadlines really matter.
They absolutely do.
And looking at the calendar right now, we're sitting squarely in what feels like a very distinct after period.
After is exactly the right word.
Yeah.
It feels like the dust is finally settling on, 20 years of arguments?
20 years, easily.
Yeah.
For decades, the entire conversation in healthcare technology, specifically around interoperability, has been so theoretical.
Oh, absolutely.
It was all white papers,
yeah.
Conferences in stuffy hotel ballrooms, and a whole lot of people saying, wouldn't it be nice if systems could actually talk to each other? It was the era of the should.
The great should.
But looking at the stack of documents we have in front of us today, primarily this new CMS interoperability framework, it feels like the theoretical debate is just dead. We're in the execution phase now.
It is a massive pivot point. We've gone from asking, why don't these systems work, to a situation where we're being told, here is the federal blueprint on exactly how they will work. The entire tone has shifted.
How so?
Well, you read the vision document from CMS, and it doesn't read like a polite suggestion or a guideline.
Not at all.
It reads like a demand.
We're done waiting. That is a direct quote from the document.
Yeah.
Kill the clipboard. That's another one. It is so aggressive. And frankly, as someone who's followed this space for a long, long time, my first reaction is just, finally.
Right. Relief.
Yes, exactly. But my second reaction, and really the whole reason we're doing this deep dive today, is a bit more cynical, I guess. We've seen mandates come and go. We've seen meaningful use. We saw the Cures Act.
Can't have.
So why is this specific moment, January 2026, actually different? And I think more importantly, are we just solving the problem of 2015 right in time to get crushed by the problem of 2026?
And that is the crucial tension. That's the whole story right there. The government has finally built this robust highway system for data. It's paved. It has clear lanes. It has speed limits. That's the CMS framework.
A good analogy.
But just as they finished pouring the last of the concrete, the cars completely changed. We aren't driving these document-based sedans anymore.
What are we driving?
We're dealing with AI-driven autonomous vehicles, metaphorically, of course. The explosion of generative AI, things like AI scribes, algorithmic diagnostics, it's introduced a set of variables that this brand new framework just wasn't originally designed to handle.
So that's our mission for today. We're going to look at this collision head on. On one side, you have the new CMS framework. What is it and why is it, maybe a big deal this time?
Right.
And on the other side, what you're calling the AI gaps, the places where this brand new framework leaks like a sieve when it comes to modern tech.
Yeah.
And then we're going to get really specific. We're going to look at a solution that claims it can bridge this entire divide.
Mm-hmm.
We're analyzing the PQC Plus platform and specifically two of their products, Smart Compliance and Smart InfoSecure.
And the claim they're making is a big one.
It is. The claim is that they don't just meet the government's voluntary blueprint. They actually exceed it by anticipating all this AI chaos.
And we really need to look at that claim with a critical eye. Because exceeding requirements is a great marketing slogan.
Easy to say?
Very easy to say. It's incredibly hard to actually do when you're dealing with the realities of federal law on one hand and, quantum cryptography on the other.
Right. Okay, so let's start with the baseline then. Let's unpack the CMS interoperability framework. It's January 2026. Set the scene for us. What are we actually looking at with this thing?
Okay, so at its heart, we are looking at a vision document that is really trying to solve the friction of the last two decades. The central objective is to create what they are calling CMS-aligned networks.
CMS-aligned networks.
Yes. The government is finally acknowledging that they can't just force every single doctor's office in the country to upgrade their server overnight. It's not realistic.
No.
So instead, they are actively looking for early adopters, these networks, that can prove they meet a specific, pretty high bar set of criteria by the end of Q1 2026.
Which is? Right now. We're in that window.
We are in it right now, yes.
And it is still voluntary, correct?
Right.
Which, I have to admit, usually makes me roll my eyes. Voluntary government programs have a tendency to be, politely ignored.
It is voluntary, for now. But the way the incentives are structured, the goal is clearly to make it the de facto standard of care. And the language they use is key. They keep framing it as market-friendly.
What do they mean by that?
They're essentially saying, look, stop debating the standards. We picked them. We're done talking. Now go build. And the most tangible kind of public-facing goal is that Kill the Clipboard initiative.
which is a fantastic slogan. I love it. But walk me through the reality of it. We've heard this promise 100 times. Electronic health records will finally save us from paper.
Oh, yes.
I still fill out the same 5 pages of paper forms every single time I see a new specialist. Why does this framework think it can actually stop that?
Because it fundamentally changes the mechanism of identity. See, previously, interoperability meant my doctor faxing, or if they were fancy, securely emailing your doctor. It was all provider to provider.
Behind the scenes.
This new framework pivots everything. It makes patient access and empowerment the very first pillar, and it all relies on IAL2 and AAL2 credentials.
Okay, let's decode the alphabet soup immediately. What are IAL2 and AAL2?
Right, so IAL2 is Identity Assurance Level 2. AAL2 is Authentication Assurance Level 2. The simplest way to think about this is banking grade or government grade digital ID.
Give me an example.
The classic example is a mobile driver's license, an MDL, on your phone. The framework says quite clearly, if a patient shows up physically or digitally with one of these verified digital IDs, the healthcare provider system must accept it as a valid login key.
Hold on. So no more creating a username like hostspeaker123 and then immediately forgetting the password for some massive hospital system's portal.
That is exactly the idea. The core concept is no additional login. If you can prove who you are with your digital wallet, the gates to your data are supposed to open. You don't need that clipboard anymore because the system can pull your data based on your verified identity, not based on your remembering if you visited that hospital network 5 years ago.
Okay, that's actually significant. That alone removes the friction of I forgot my password, which has to be, what, 90% of why patient portals fail?
It's a huge barrier to entry, and this is designed to eliminate it.
All right, but let's look at the second pillar here, provider access and delegation. This one seems a bit more thorny.
It is. This is where the complexity starts to creep in. The stated goal is full treatment access.
Full treatment access.
Meaning if a provider is validated, and that means they are listed in the CMS National Provider Directory, they get everything. The network nodes, the hospitals, the clinics, they are required to respond to a valid query with all available information.
All of it.
Everything, except where it's restricted by very specific privacy laws, like substance abuse records, for example.
The phrase, all available information, that scares people.
Oh.
And probably for good reason.
It should make you pause, absolutely. But the intent is to improve continuity of care, to stop doctors from making decisions with incomplete data.
Okay.
But the more interesting part, and this is the part that really foreshadows our whole AI problem, is the delegated model.
What's that?
The framework explicitly, in writing, allows providers to use technology vendors as what are called business associates.
Okay, let's pause right there. Business associates. In the language of EPPO, that means a vendor who signs a contract, a BAA, promising to keep patient data secret.
Correct. But let's think about 2026. Who is that vendor today? It's not just your billing company anymore.
No.
It's an AI scribe company. It's a diagnostic algorithm provider that analyzes radiology scans. The framework says, if Dr. Smith legally delegates his access to AI company X, then AI company X has the very same right to access your data as Dr. Smith himself does.
That feels like a massive door to just leave wide open. Dr. Smith is a human being with a medical license and, you know, ethical boards to answer to. AI company X is, well, it's just software, it's code.
And that is exactly where the tension lies. The framework, as it's written, treats the AI vendor just like it would any other administrative partner. It makes the assumption that the existing contracts, those business associate agreements or BAAs, are sufficient to govern that entire relationship.
We will definitely come back to that, because I have a strong feeling that the word sufficient is doing a whole lot of heavy lifting in that sentence.
It is.
Let's hit the technical pillars quickly so we have the full picture. Pillar 3, data availability and standards.
Right. This is the how of it all. It mandates the use of USCDI version 3.
And for those who don't live and breathe this, USCDI is the United States core data for interoperability.
Exactly. It's the standardized vocabulary for health data. And version 3 is important because it includes more data on social drivers of health, more granular patient status updates, and critically, it sets a very hard deadline, July 4th, 2026.
Independence Day. That's a bit on the nose.
Bureaucrats do love their symbolism, but the point is, by that date, FHIR APIs, that's Fast Healthcare Interoperability Resources, must be fully operational for any of these participating networks.
So the message is clear. The how is settled. Yeah. We are using FHIR. We are using USCDI V3. Stop trying to invent your own proprietary formats.
That's the message. The debate is over.
Okay, and let's skip over Pillar 4, network connectivity, for a moment, because that's really just the plumbing of how these networks talk to each other. Pillar 5 is identity, security, and trust.
Right. And this brings us full circle. It mandates the IAL2 and AAL2 standards we just talked about, but it also requires something very rigorous, HITRACE certification, or an accepted equivalent.
And HITRACE is a big deal.
It's a very big deal. It's a comprehensive security framework. It's expensive to get, it's difficult to maintain, and it covers hundreds of different security and privacy controls. It is not a rubber stamp certification.
So let me play the advocate for the government here for a second. If I'm looking at this on paper, it seems pretty solid. We have verified digital IDs with ILL2. We have a standard data language with USCDI V3. We have a tough security certification with HITRACE. And we have a clear mandate to share the data. On paper, this solves the problem we've been talking about for 20 years. So why are we worried?
We are worried because this framework is a perfect solution for the healthcare system of, say, 2020. It beautifully solves the document problem.
The document problem.
Moving PDFs, lab results, structure doctor's notes securely and efficiently from point A to point B. It's fantastic for that. But it fundamentally misunderstands the data problem of 2026, which is a problem being driven entirely by artificial intelligence.
Because AI doesn't just move documents.
It doesn't. It consumes them.
It eats them.
It devours them, and it transforms them.
Mm-hmm.
The industry experts that are cited in our source material, specifically the analysis around this PQC Plus platform, have identified 5 critical AI gaps. These are things that the CMS framework, for all its strengths, simply does not address, because it wasn't built for a world where software is starting to make clinical decisions.
All right, let's walk through these gaps one by one. And I want to get specific here to make it real for people. Let's imagine a patient. We'll call her Sarah. Sarah has a complex condition, maybe a rare autoimmune disorder. She sees specialists in a bunch of different disconnected hospital systems.
The classic use case.
Under the new CMS framework, her data flows freely between them. That's great. So where does she fall into the first gap?
Okay, so let's look at gap one, AI-specific consent and governance. Sarah walks into a new clinic. She's handed a tablet and signs the standard high-pay consent form. That form says her data can be used for treatment, payment, and healthcare operations.
Right. Standard stuff. She wants to be treated, and she wants her insurance to pay the bill. That's all she's thinking about.
Of course. But what she doesn't know, what's not on that form, is that this particular hospital system uses a back-end AI service to optimize their scheduling and perform risk stratification on their patient population. That AI service is a commercial product, a business associate.
And under the CMS framework, as we discussed, that data sharing is perfectly legal.
It's perfectly legal under the Healthcare Operations Clause. However, that AI model might be actively learning from Sarah's data. It might be incorporating her very specific, very rare phenotypic data into its core training set, which is then used to improve the product that's sold to other health systems.
So wait, Sarah consented to her doctor treating her. She absolutely did not consent to becoming a training node for a for-profit commercial product.
Exactly. And the CMS framework has no mechanism for this. It doesn't require AI model training to be a separate, explicit line item on the consent form. It lacks the granularity to distinguish between look at my chart to help me right now and absorb my chart to improve your product forever.
Wow. That feels like a fundamental violation of trust, even if it is, as you said, technically legal under that broad operations definition.
It is a massive trust gap, and that leads us directly into gap number 2, continuous AI model monitoring.
Okay.
So let's say Sarah gets a diagnosis that was assisted by an AI tool. The CMS framework requires very clear audit logs of who accessed the data. It'll say, Dr. Smith accessed Sarah's record at 2 p.m. on Monday.
Okay, that seems reasonable.
It is. But the framework does not require any audit of the model's behavior. Suppose the AI model that was used has suffered from something called model drift.
Define that term for us. What is model drift?
AI models are trained on historical data, but the real world is not static. It changes. Demographics in a neighborhood change. New variants of a disease emerge. The way disease is present can shift over time. So an AI trained on 2020 patient data might be 99% accurate in 2020, but by 2026, due to subtle population shifts, its accuracy might have degraded to 85%. That degradation in performance is called model drift.
So the tool is actually getting dumber, or at least less accurate over time, and it's happening silently.
And the CMS framework has no mechanism to catch that. It's like checking that a car has valid registration, that's the user login, but never ever checking to see if the brakes still work. So Sarah could get a diagnosis that's based on a drifting, less accurate model, and no regulatory flag is ever raised because the transaction itself was secure. The data was accessed by an authorized party.
That is genuinely terrifying. It's a silent failure mode that no one is watching.
And that ties into gap three, which is what some people are calling the nutrition label problem: AI data rights and transparency.
A nutrition label for AI. I like that.
The idea is simple. Does Sarah or even her doctor know which specific AI model was used in her care? Does she have a right to know if her personal health information, her PHI, was retained by that model after the fact? Does she know its known failure modes? The CMS framework focuses on network transparency, network A, successfully connected to network B. It does not require tool transparency.
So it's like buying food at the supermarket that's just labeled produced in a factory without any list of ingredients or allergy warnings.
That's a perfect analogy. And for a patient like Sarah with a complex condition, knowing why a certain diagnostic path was chosen is just as important as the decision itself.
Right. Okay, what's gap four?
Gap four is a very practical, on-the-ground problem. AI integration into clinical workflows. You could call it the problem of plenty. The CMS framework is great. It ensures Sarah's data arrives at the new specialist's office in the proper USCDI V3 format. But Sarah's doctor, like many doctors today, is using an AI scribe that listens to the conversation and outputs a 3-page unstructured narrative summary.
A giant wall of text.
A giant wall of text. Yeah. And the framework doesn't mandate how that beautiful narrative text gets turned back into structured, computable data. So the doctor is now overwhelmed. They have the data, but it's not usable. It doesn't trigger the right alerts in the electronic health record, the EHR, because to the EHR, it's just a blob of text.
So Sarah's care could actually be delayed, not because the data is missing, but because it's in the wrong format, and her doctor is paralyzed by this information overload.
Interoperability succeeds, but clinical utility fails. Precisely.
And that brings us to the last one, gap five. You mentioned that this one sounds like science fiction, but the source material we're looking at is adamant that this is the biggest long-term existential threat post-quantum security.
It is.
The phrase I keep hearing is harvest now, decrypt later. Now, that sounds like a plot from a spy novel. Break down the actual physics of this threat. Why is this a problem for us today in 2026?
Okay, here's the reality. Most of the encryption we use today, the digital lock on the door of your health data, it relies on math problems that are incredibly hard for our current classical computers to solve.
Like what?
Things like factoring huge prime numbers. That's the basis of RSA encryption, which is everywhere. It would take the biggest supercomputer we have today, you know, a million years, to guess the key.
So we feel safe. Our data is secure.
We feel safe now. But quantum computers don't play by the same rules. They operate on the principles of quantum physics, and once they reach a certain scale, which many experts are predicting is just 5 to 10 years away, they will be able to solve those specific math problems, the ones our security relies on, almost instantly.
So they don't just pick the lock. They basically melt the door off its hinges.
That is a great way to put it. Now, you might say, okay, but who cares? That's still years away. The problem is that bad actors, we're talking state-sponsored hacking groups, sophisticated criminal syndicates, are stealing vast amounts of encrypted data today, right now.
They can't read it, though.
Not yet. To them, it's just garbled, useless code. But they are hoarding it. They're storing it on massive servers. They are harvesting now.
And just waiting.
Yeah.
Waiting for the day that a working, large-scale quantum computer comes online.
It decrypt later. And here's the critical part. Unlike your credit card number, which you can cancel and change, Sarah cannot change her DNA. She can't change her history of mental health diagnosis. If that data is harvested today under current encryption standards, it is exposed forever once the decryption capability arrives.
And the CMS framework mandates HITRUST certification.
Mm-hmm.
Is HITRUST not quantum safe?
HITRUST is excellent for protecting against current threats. It is a fantastic standard for today. It is not, however, designed to repel a future quantum attack. It leaves that 10-year horizon completely, utterly unguarded.
So let me just recap this oh no moment we're having. Mm-hmm. We have a new government framework that's actually great at moving documents and checking digital IDs.
Yes.
But it completely fails to regulate how patient data is used for AI training. It has no way of detecting model drift. It lacks transparency for the AI tools themselves. It inadvertently creates workflow bottlenecks with unstructured data from those same tools, and it ignores the long-term quantum decryption threat entirely.
That is the scorecard, yes.
Okay. This brings us to the proposed solution we're analyzing today, the PQC Plus platform. The analysis we have from Transformative IP claims this platform is the bridge that is specifically designed to fix these five gaps. Now, I have to say, I'm always skeptical when a single platform claims it can solve world hunger, achieve peace, and fix interoperability all at once. So I want really grill this.
And you should. It's a healthy skepticism.
PQC Plus is described in the material as a secure, compliant fabric. It's made up of 13 different modules. We're focusing on just two of them, Smart Compliance and Smart InfoSecure. Let's start with the governance piece, Smart Compliance. How does it physically stop the problems we just described? How does it close those gaps?
The core engine here is a combination of two things. The first is something they call jurisdictional awareness, and the second is an AI compliance gateway.
Okay, jurisdictional awareness. Let me guess. That means it knows where I am.
It knows where the patient is, it knows where the provider is, and crucially, it knows what the specific privacy laws are in both of those places and any place in between.
Give me our Sarah example again.
Let's go back to Sarah. Suppose she lives in California, so she's covered by the CCPA privacy laws. But she's seeing a specialist via a telehealth appointment, and that specialist is in New York. And that specialist is using an AI diagnostic tool that's hosted on a cloud server in, say, Texas.
That sounds like a legal and compliance nightmare. Whose laws apply?
It is a nightmare. And normally, a human would have to figure that out. The PQC Plus platform automates it. It evaluates the regulations of all those jurisdictions, California, New York, Texas, plus federal HIPAA law, and it automatically applies what they call the most restrictive rule.
So it defaults to the highest level of privacy.
By default, it doesn't ask the doctor to become a lawyer. It enforces the strictest privacy standard automatically.
Okay, that handles the human and location side of things. What about the AI itself?
That is the job of the AI compliance gateway. It uses something called a Model Context Protocol, or MCP. The best way to think of this is as a very smart, very strict bouncer that stands at the door between the data and the AI model.
Or bouncer. I like that.
So when an AI tool, let's call it Dr. Bot, requests Sarah's medical record, it doesn't just get direct access to the database. It has to go through the MCP first. And the MCP asks a series of questions. One, did Sarah give explicit consent for her data to be used by an AI for this purpose?
Not just general consent, but AI-specific consent.
Correct. Two, is the specific AI tool, this Dr. Bot, on the hospital's pre-approved list of safe and vetted AI vendors? And three, does the data being requested contain any specially protected information, like substance use history under 42 CFR Part 2?
And if the answer to that consent question is no?
The bouncer keeps the door shut. The AI gets an access denied message. It gets nothing. Or, and this is where it gets really nuanced, if the answer is yes to using AI for treatment, but no to using my data for training, the MCP can get clever.
How so?
It can allow the AI to read the data in a temporary sandboxed environment to generate its diagnosis for Sarah, but it simultaneously applies data masking and anonymization techniques so the data cannot be ingested and saved into the model's long-term memory for training purposes. It creates a sterile, single-use environment for that transaction.
Okay, that directly addresses gap one, the consent problem, and gap three, the transparency problem. But what about the big one, the security? The quantum threat. This must be where the other module, Smart InfoSecure, comes in.
That's right.
The source material puts a huge emphasis on the fact that this specific module has an FDA authority to operate, or ATO. I want to pause on that for a second. Mm-hmm. Why does a piece of security software need FDA approval? It's not a pacemaker. It's not a drug.
This is a massive distinction, and it's easy to miss. Usually, security software is just considered, you know, IT infrastructure. But by choosing to go through the rigorous process of seeking and achieving an FDA ATO, PQC Plus is signaling that it operates at the level of a medical device.
And that's a higher bar.
An incredibly higher bar. The level of scrutiny for an ATO is intense. It involves demonstrating not just security, but safety, efficacy, and resilience. The question isn't just, does the software crash? The question is, if this software fails, could patients be harmed?
And it claims to use NIST-certified post-quantum cryptography.
Yes, and this is the core of it. NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, has been running a multi-year competition to develop the new cryptographic algorithms that are resistant to being broken by quantum computers. They've now standardized them. You'll see them referred to as FIPS 203, 204, and 205. PQC Plus has implemented these new standards now, not as a roadmap item, but in production today.
So let's connect this back to our Harvest Now, Decrypt Later threat. If I'm a hospital, and I send Sarah's data, through a system protected by PQC Plus and Smart Info Secure today.
It gets encrypted using these new methods. The underlying math is called lattice-based cryptography, which is a problem that even a future powerful quantum computer can't easily unravel. So if a state-sponsored hacker steals that encrypted file today and they sit on it for 10 years until their quantum computer is built,
it's still useless to them.
It's still just garbled nonsense. They still can't open it. You have effectively immunized that data against the future threat today.
That is a fundamentally different security posture than just being HITRUST certified.
It's not even in the same league. HITRUST is the floor. It's an excellent floor, but it's the baseline. FDA ATO plus NIST certified post-quantum cryptography is the ceiling.
I want to challenge one part of this, though. Stronger security usually means more friction. If I put 5 deadbolts on my front door, I'm definitely safer, but it takes me 10 minutes to leave the house. Does this quantum vault, as you call it, slow down the actual process of care? Does it get in the doctor's way?
And that's gap 4, right? The workflow integration gap. This is where the platform tries to be clever with another one of its modules. It's called, and you'll have to forgive the name, Smart Non-Structure to Structure.
That is a terrible name. Very, very literal.
Extremely literal. But its function is critical to answering your question about friction. It's designed to solve that wall of text problem we talked about.
From the AI scribe.
Exactly. When that AI scribe spits out that 3-page narrative summary about Sarah's visit, PQC Plus doesn't just encrypt it and hide it away in the vault. It uses its own internal AI models to first parse that unstructured text. It extracts the key clinical concepts, medications, dosages, new diagnoses, follow-up plans, and then it automatically converts them into structured, computable FHIR resources.
So it actually cleans up the mess before it locks it in the vault.
Precisely. So when the next doctor or a nurse or a billing specialist opens Sarah's chart, they don't see a link to a PDF of a text blob they have to read through. They see properly populated fields in their own EHR. A new medication appears on the medication list. A new diagnosis appears on the problem list. It actually speeds up the downstream workflow despite the much heavier security layer.
Okay, I want to talk about something else mentioned in the source material, because this seems to go way beyond even the CMS requirements.
Yeah.
It mentions APL banking integration. The CMS framework is about health data. Why is a platform like PQC Plus bringing banking into the conversation?
This is a really interesting strategic choice on their part. Think about the patient experience from a high level. What are the two most stressful, confusing parts of any healthcare journey?
Well, one is being sick. The other is figuring out how to pay for it.
Undeniably true. And currently, those two things live in completely separate, disconnected universes. You have a patient portal from your hospital where you can see your lab results, and then you have a totally different portal from your insurance company, or you get a paper bill in the mail for the money side of things.
They don't talk to each other at all.
Never. The PQC Plus platform has a module that integrates directly with merchant processing systems, the same systems that handle credit card payments everywhere. It allows the financial data, the claims, the explanation of benefits or EOBs, the copays, the deductibles to live inside the same secure mobile application as the clinical data.
So in the app, I can see diagnosis, strep throat, right next to a line item that says patient responsibility, $150.
And you could securely pay that $150 bill right there using the same banking grade digital identity credentials that you use to access the record in the first place. It starts to treat the health record as a unified asset class, just like a bank account. It's a consumer-centric view that the CMS framework doesn't explicitly mandate, but its identity standards absolutely enable it.
Let's double-click on that identity piece and verify the exceeds requirements claim.
Yeah.
We talk about credentials, and the source mentions entity resolution.
Right. The Smartentity Resolution module. This is an AI-powered master patient index.
Why do you need AI for this? Can't the systems just match my name and my social security number? Seems straightforward.
You would be shocked at how messy that data is in the real world. You have typos, you have women who change their names after marriage, you have hyphenated last names, you have twins with very similar names and dates of birth. Standard deterministic matching, which requires an exact match on key fields, fails constantly and creates duplicate records.
I see.
PQC Plus uses probabilistic matching. It's an AI model that looks at hundreds of different variables, address history, phone numbers, insurance IDs, to make a statistical judgment and say, we are 99.9% certain that Sarah J. Smith in System A is the exact same person as Sarah Smith Jones, who used to live at this other address in System B.
And what if it's part of that 0.1% and it's wrong?
It has a built-in proxy access and a human-in-the-loop verification protocol for edge cases. But the key benefit for the patient, for Sarah, is that she no longer needs to remember where all her data lives. The system resolves her identity across the entire network for her. When she shows up at a new doctor's office and logs in with her MDL, the system can proactively say, "Oh, I see you have records at these three other facilities. Do you want to pull them in for this visit?"
That right there. That is the kill the clipboard promise made real.
It is. It is the fundamental difference between the CMS baseline, which is you now have the right to go fetch your data, and the PTC Plus approach, which is we've already found all your data for you.
Let's pivot to the so what. We've gone through a lot of technical ground here, but let's zoom out. If I'm listening to this right now, maybe I'm the CIO of a large hospital system, or maybe I'm a health tech developer. What is the actual business case for doing all of this? Because PQC plus SO with FDA approval and quantum encryption, it sounds expensive. Why not just do the bare minimum to meet the voluntary CMS blueprint and call it a day?
That's the classic compliance versus strategy debate. And it's a valid question. If you just meet the baseline CMS requirements, you will eventually avoid penalties and you'll be compliant. But you are also building a data network that is completely liable for all of the AI risks that you aren't monitoring.
You're talking about the shadow AI problem. Doctors and departments using tools without official approval.
Exactly. If you implement a system like PQC plus Dresh with its AI compliance gateway, you are effectively creating an AI formulary for your entire health system.
An AI formulary. Explain that.
Just like a hospital has a drug formulary, a list that says you can only prescribe these specific approved antibiotics, the PQC plus dashboard allows the health system's leadership to say, these are the five AI tools that we have vetted for security, for bias, for accuracy. These are approved for use. Everything else is technically blocked by the gateway from accessing patient data.
So it gives control back to the CIO and the chief medical officer.
It takes the wild west of AI adoption, which is what's happening now, and turns it into a managed, governable, and defensible strategy. And from a purely tactical standpoint, for that Q1 2026 goal of becoming a CMS-aligned network, a platform like PTC Plus is designed to check all 26 of the required criteria boxes out of the box. It's a turnkey solution for the immediate mandate, but it's also an insurance policy against the AI-driven future.
And what about for the listener who isn't a CIO? For the patient, what's the so what for them?
For the patient, it ultimately comes down to the right to say no. The CMS framework, at its core, gives you the right to access your data. A system like PQC Plus gives you the right to control how that data is used by machines. And that is the crucial difference between access and agency.
Access versus agency. I really like that distinction.
And it comes back to that nutrition label idea. It's about the patient having the ability to open their mobile app and see a clear, simple audit trail. Diagnostic Bot Inc. accessed my chest x-ray at 3:15 p.m. and all personal identifiers were masked. That kind of radical transparency is what creates trust. And in healthcare, trust is the only currency that actually matters in the long run.
We're nearing the end of our time here, but I want to circle all the way back to where we started. We said we're at a pivot point. It's January 2026. The done waiting era has begun.
Yes.
It really feels like we are building the digital health infrastructure that is going to last for the next 50 years. The architectural decisions that are being made this year in the implementation of this very framework are going to determine how privacy and security work for my grandkids.
That is not an exaggeration in the slightest. Just think about that harvest now, decrypt later threat one more time. It forces us to think on a geological timeline, not a fiscal quarter timeline. The data we are making interoperable today will exist for decades.
It's a very sobering thought.
It is. If we build this new national health data framework using only 2020 era security, like standard RSA encryption, even if the state is US certified, we are knowingly building a beautiful new house with a ticking time bomb in the foundation. We know the quantum capabilities are coming. We know the hunger that AI models have for data is insatiable and growing.
So the question then for everyone listening, whether you are buying this technology or you're building it or you're just using it as a patient, is this. Are we building our systems for the compliance audit that's scheduled for next month? Or are we building them for the reality of the next decade?
That is the defining question of 2026.
And frankly, after walking through the gaps in the standard framework today, I don't think the government blueprint alone is enough to answer for the next decade. It gets us to the starting line, which is a huge accomplishment, but it doesn't win the race.
No, it doesn't. Winning the race requires that extra layer. It requires the plus in PQC plus PECs, that combination of granular governance, post-quantum security, and AI-specific controls.
We are going to have to leave it there. a massive topic, and it's one I suspect we will be revisiting very soon as these first CMSLI networks start to actually go live this spring. For everyone listening, I'd encourage you to look at your own organizations or even the portals you use as a patient and ask that hard question. Do we have an AI nutrition label? Or are we just feeding the black box and hoping for the best?
Always ask what's in the box.
Thanks for diving deep with us. We'll see you on the next one.
Goodbye, everyone.